Welcome to Season 4, Episode 14 of the Practical 365 Podcast with me, Steve Goodman, and Rich Dean. Hi, Rich, how are you?
Hey, Steve, what's going on, man? Long time no talk.
All is good, all is good. You say that, we chatted earlier in the week, didn't we?
No, but we didn't talk face-to-face.
Yes.
We talked, over just voice, so it's good to see you.
yes, it is. So are you coming to the Experts Conference in Europe in a few weeks' time?
No, there wasn't enough room for me. You know, budgets.
Well, I'm quite lucky I'm going. I mean, London is not that far for me, but it's back, if you haven't heard, and it's in London, Paris, and Munich this year, March 18th, 19th, and the 21st. I have been asked to tell you that it's going to be jam-packed with Active Directory Microsoft 365 training from the experts themselves and me. I've got a couple of sessions, actually, depending on which city you go to. So it was brilliant last year. So make sure you register as soon as you can, because it's not long away. It's less than a month now. And, of course, later in the year, if you do miss it, then you've got Tech, which I'm sure, Rich, you will be at, and probably our guest is on the show later, Becky. Now, on the show today, we've got a few things to talk about. Exchange, good news and bad news, I think.
Yes.
Exchange patching, and I'm interested in what some of the other news might mean to you coming from a software vendor. And, of course, we've got some news in the world of artificial intelligence and Copilot and Viva, but not too much Viva, because nobody needs too much Viva. And, of course, as I mentioned, we'll be joined by Becky Cross to talk to us on the show today as well. But let's get started then. Now, application impersonation. Over the years, that has been obviously one of the most important parts of a tool-based migration, using on-demand tools, which I suppose, looking at the guidance at the moment, that wouldn't be the recommended way of setting things up anyway, using a standard roles-based access controls type of account. But this is going away. And from May this year, you won't be able to assign the role to an account. Is this a good thing?
Well, I mean, it's a pretty good thing. I mean, Midnight Blizzard, I mean, there was a direct correlation to this to gaining access to the mailboxes of the corporate executives at Microsoft. So I don't know. I'm sure it was probably already on the roadmap and maybe it was accelerated. I'm not sure. I don't watch it close enough, but I would imagine that's probably the impetus. So I don't know. Becky, what do you think? You read everything about Exchange. Do you have any thoughts?
I think it's a constant ongoing challenge, and I think this was probably coming already. And like you said, this just accelerated it because they realized there's a risk here and we've got to tackle it now.
Yeah, indeed.
I do think it's a good thing. I don't keep up to date with every single migration vendor on the planet, but there's going to be people who've got backup software that uses it that they haven't, that they've not kept in support, which would be one, you know, old copies of Veeam and things like that, I would suspect. I don't want to say anything bad about other migration vendors, but I remember that there was one that got bought and then they exited half the staff immediately after buying them. So if you know who that is, you know who that is. But for years before that, their Outlook reconfiguration tool didn't support conditional access and modern authentication. So I hope, because lots of people still use that other tool, and it always was a great tool, right? I don't have anything bad to say about it, but I hope tools like that do get updates if they haven't already. But it's, you know, we talked a few weeks back to Microsoft about AWS going entirely, which is going to be some way off with the Graph API, but AWS isn't going. Though that's the thing,
isn't it? When you were on that interview with AWS. Are they looking at parallelism? They're not looking at parallelism, like
As in speed,
yeah, go ahead.
Or as in parity.
Well, no, sorry. In terms of feature parallelism, like between AWS and Graph,
I think that until they hit all the boxes, then they can't really expect people to, because loads of enterprises build their own applications, yeah? So, Becky.
I want to address Rich's question there about the parallelism and parity, because that, you know, I work with applications that are using EWS, and we're looking at how do we switch away from that. And from what I'm hearing, there's not going to be exact parity. There's not one-to-one. And so it's going to be a challenge because, yes, there's parity for some things. But then other things, my understanding is Microsoft says, you're going to use a totally different method. You're going to start importing and exporting. You know, we're just going to get rid of that EWS functionality. So it's, I think it's going to be a big combination.
On the show, when we were chatting to Microsoft, they seemed as if they wanted to understand from customers and vendors alike as to what was needed, and they were open to doing changes. But I can absolutely imagine that they may well say, well, if you follow this roundabout set of steps, then you'll achieve the same thing. And the intricacies of that, like, for example, you know, the, you know, archive migration software and extensions that some vendors have used. I think Archive Shuttle was one that used some set of extensions with EWS for uploading binary blobs a particular way to be able to increase the throughput. Things like that, I suppose, would be, they're not going to be top of the list, are they? But I know customers that when they're migrating massive amounts of data in, speed on those kind of migrations is a massive thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think public folders are one of those that are definitely down near the bottom of the list, even lower than those archives.
So they've got some work to do in that area, but it's not going immediately. So EWS application impersonation is going, but you can use an app registration to achieve the same thing. And you might have to, if you're the developer, update code so it uses a separate method of addressing the impersonated rights that you've got. So it's something that a vendor should be able to update software with. So the on-demand tools, my recollection is you can already use an application ID with those for authentication, which would mean that it already supports that those are the methods, right?
Yeah, for the Quest On Demand tool, yes, it uses the application connections, and there are a few tiny little workloads that still have those hooks, but those are going away. It's going to be an easy switch.
So that's the easy bit, but it's something that that if you're a customer and you've developed internal applications, then I suppose you've got to weigh up, do you make changes now and rewrite something to use Graph API, or do you make these little changes earlier on? But if you do nothing, then things will stop working in a year's time.
From a purpose perspective, impersonation is so that you can act as a user. And that's the yes. Vulnerability. And granted, it's EWS. But if that same functionality goes into Graph because it's required for obvious functionality, isn't it the same vulnerability, just in a different place? Is it more secure because it's Graph?
I suppose it's the way of storing the credential, I suppose, isn't it?
I mean, you know, the impersonation thing was one small part of the Midnight Blizzard, so it really was about misconfigurations that was the big blunder. So,
and if you go back, say, seems weird to say 10 years, but a lot of the migration tooling on the market, when you created source and target connections, you put in a username and password. The username and password would have been stored on that third-party vendor's cloud system, and that would have had full access to mailboxes on both sides. Most organizations are pretty interested in how credentials are stored and used in other services, especially ones that can access all of your mailboxes. So It's, you know, it's completely understandable, though, that someone would be concerned. It's almost a travesty that they weren't so concerned in the past, because even back then you had people showing proof of concepts for compromising Exchange Online through the use of impersonation and being able to register applications against reading or writing to a mailbox. It's only a good thing that this hasn't become a widespread problem.
I mean, if you're going back 10, 15 years, some of the practices that we used to use for M&A to move things from here to there were not security focused. Like, give me full access to this and this and this, and I'm going to move it over here, and it's going to sit in the middle sometime, and then we're going to do some cleanup. So, yeah, it has changed a lot.
Yes, it definitely has. Now, the one thing that that you should know if you're running Exchange Hybrid, theoretically, even if you're just running the management tools for managing the PowerShell, the attributes for our PowerShell, the latest cumulative updates have been released for Exchange Server 2019. The H1 cumulative update, CU14, is here. Now, if you're using SSL offloading because you publish it on premises or using hybrid modern authentication, then you do need to be careful because extended protection is enabled by default. This is a wider Windows feature. What you'll need to do is opt out of that using the command line switches. So theoretically, if you're running not client access front-end servers, but servers that are sitting on the front-end of your organization, the ones that are behind the load balancers, that make sure that you've read all the prerequisites for those before just running the patching. So the extended protection is a wider feature, enabled by default, but you've got to do all the prerequisites. Prerequisites are listed in the article for it. I now have an Exchange server, at home. So I'll have to patch it, essentially, if you can see the video.
What's the risk if you're not patching? What's the big piece of that, the extended protection?
The security updates that cover some CVEs, I think the security updates that were already released for CU13 cover those, but you do need to get up to date. And if you were still on CU12, then you definitely need to get up to date now and move to the latest one as well. So CU13 had some security updates that were released a month or two ago. These are included in that update. There's no new features or anything like that though, that are included with this.
Features are few and far between in Exchange on premises anymore.
New features, yes, yeah. But that's the way it goes, you know. You never know. There might be a day when people start moving back from the cloud.
Never know.
And it'll be a whole new wave.
I think that's a favorite topic of many people in the industry. Like, when's it going to happen? The pendulum's going to swing.
Now, guest this week is Becky Cross, who did jump in a little bit earlier, but we haven't formally introduced you. Hi, Becky. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Rich. Thanks for having me. I feel honored to be invited.
It's an absolute pleasure. Can you give us a bit of an overview of what you do so people who don't know you have an idea of what your job is and what your experience and background is?
Absolutely. So I'm Becky Cross. I work at Quest Software right now. I'm actually a technical product manager. So I help manage some of our tools for doing migrations, Quest On Demand, some of our others. I focus on Active Directory and Exchange. I actually came to Quest from the Binary Tree acquisition. So some of you might remember Binary Tree. And, you know, when we talk about all the different products out there, I used their products as a sysadmin years ago. I've been around, 20 years in Active Directory. I've migrated from Lotus to Exchange, from Exchange to Exchange online. I had a lot of fun doing delivery projects. And now, Rich was nice enough to propose, hey, what do you think about trying out the product side of the house and trying to improve the products instead of just delivering them over and over again? So that's what I play around in these days.
So there's quite a lot of new features that have came in to the on-demand products for things like migrations. Now, one thing that comes up a lot on projects with my customers is moving as part of a migration to a cloud-only model. So for our customers, often we'll be talking about the migration, and they might be thinking, we'll build out a new AD and move everything across. And then sometimes, where it's like a smaller carve-out and stuff like that, they might take the option that often we'll suggest, actually, of going straight to the cloud. And there have been a host of improvements to make that process easier on the Quest side. But I'm only seeing a small minority, I suppose, companies based out of the UK What are the motivations that you're seeing in terms of customers moving to a cloud-only model?
Well, I see a few motivations. I mean, today, as we know, security motivates a lot of different things. And so the security concerns of being on-prem and the fact that when you have to update your on-prem environment, you might have delays. You know, you might take time before you even realize that there's an issue that you have to address. And so if you move to the cloud, you are putting your trust in Microsoft. But if you do trust them to be on top of things, if there's a concern, they are making those updates to their environment immediately, right? It's a lot faster response to the security. So I think security is one, but I also want to say the management aspect. You know, if you think about the pandemic, right, that really accelerated remote work. So I think all of us here on this podcast today, we're working from home. We are not in a central office. We're not connected to that Active Directory, you know, right there on site. And so for trying to manage all of us out there is a lot. It's very encouraging to try and get people to, you know what, let's just get all of your identities, all your devices, everything, just get it into the cloud because I can centrally manage it and maybe feel a little bit more secure.
So I think you've got customers moving to a SaaS-only strategy as well. And as they do that, it removes a lot of the old blockers as well for going across. I would definitely agree with all of that, though. I remember at Tech Europe last year, the one thing I walked away from thinking was, I really wouldn't want to be running any Active Directory on premises, either in a smaller organization or even a large one, but particularly like a small one where you don't have all the support and resources. You know, a small business with, say, 500 people might have 3 or 4 different sites across the country, the main controller sitting there. It's now the kind of thing that could keep you up at night if you're one of only maybe 1 or 2 IT people who are managing that infrastructure, because it's such a big target.
And that's a good point. The people who know AD, the people who know how to manage it, we're all kind of starting to near retirement. So there just aren't as many. Well, I mean, I hope I don't have to work until I'm 90, but but there's just fewer of us, you know? So yeah, especially those small companies, good luck
well, finding someone. Well, I think more than it's fewer of us now, there's fewer coming up into it because the focus is cloud and they're being sold these other ideas. So no one's selling anybody in college about Active Directory engineering.
No, they all want to work
or
on
forest topology designs.
Oh gosh, the thing is, that's the thing. You could say things like deny. Do you remember deny the apply and things like that from your MCSEs? And yeah, a lot of people don't get that. So you know, so like one of the team leads at my work who was born in the cloud. Technology speaking, used to play rugby with the actor that played Draco Malfoy in Harry Potter, which makes me feel really old. But you know, these are skills that people do go back and learn. But I suppose even when I think about customers who've been managing Active Directory for a long time, though, those people have moved into different roles. They don't look after, they might be enterprise architects if they're still at the same company. They'll have moved into different jobs 2 or 3 times since. And if anything else, it's a noose really that's stuck around their neck of something that they are the person that knows about. I say that, I've literally on my other screen got Active Directory users and computers open. the point I suppose is you might still run Active Directory, but perhaps you compartmentalize it for the remainder of applications. For example, I synchronize mine. I've set up an Active Directory recently because customers are still asking me about Copilot and access to the on-prem file shares. So setting it up where the machine I'm on is completely cloud joined native, but I can still access the on-premises file shares because I've got the right hooks set up in things like Intune as well for prompting the Active Directory domain name so that Kerberos, things like that work correctly. So it's possible to move pretty much to cloud only and then even just keep a subset. So it's, often people say it's not doable, but it actually might be more doable than you think. Now, I'm going to ask a question then because I'm interested in this because I don't get hands-on on AD migrations anymore. But the Quest tooling, does that migrate AD devices then to cloud only these days?
It does. So it's just, yeah. It's very similar to an AD migration, to the degree where you're wanting to unjoin Active Directory and join Entra, right? But the trick is, do I have to reset the device or can I at least have it keep working and you know, the user just logs in and everything feels and looks the same. So yeah, we do migrate the devices and we make them look and feel the same because we know that that's the big question, right? Do I really have to reset this?
I will have a look and see whether there's a zero touch section on your website still for those. yeah, so, and that is a big part of it, isn't it? Because often that's the solution, isn't it? People hear, which is, if I'm going to do this, then I've got to rebuild the machines. And if you're the user and your machine works, do you want it rebuilt? Because IT want things to be more secure. So there are ways around some of those challenges. You don't have to autopilot everything.
Yeah. Well, you got to balance user experience versus what IT needs and requires, for sure. I mean, there's got to be some pros and cons to each of them. And, you know, in the end, IT is going to probably decide. But the end user experience, definitely, this type of technology definitely helps. And I understand, Becky, there's a deeper story there. So you had to kind of convince Microsoft that this was a doable method, like, because all of their documentation says reset, reset, reset. And I think you guys have innovated your way out of that.
Yeah, thankfully we had lots of conversations with Microsoft. We spoke with Gartner and they went to Microsoft on our behalf as well, because they were really impressed. And they're like, oh, you actually can migrate a device to the cloud and not have to reset it. I was pretty excited when I saw Microsoft update their website. Used to say, you must reset. There is no supported way. And now I think it says something like, well, we recommend that you consider a reset and starting fresh, you know, but they've realized, yes, there are tools that can do this without impacting your end users, which, you know, like you said, there might be reasons why you still want a reset. Maybe your AD and everything, your devices are so insecure and you just think they're a giant security risk and you say, you know what, we're going to throw these away and start fresh. You know what, mm-hmm. Do that. If you have those concerns, then maybe you don't want to carry over the existing risks. But end user productivity, man, let's just migrate.
Some of those risks, I suppose, can be remediated against. Like, you know, mm-hmm. customers where their users, especially senior leaders, have had admin access for a long, long time. And you might not want that anymore, but you don't know what they've done to the machine. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. It's always a problem. I can think of AD to AD migrations. I mentioned this one because the Quest stuff worked great. And as would other tools, maybe, you know, back in some of the other tools that you could use, like Microsoft's free tooling for that as well, was good for that sort of stuff. But it's the user disruption. I remember I was working on a project where I was doing the first few sites, but then I got to sit at home and then coordinate contractors at all these paper mills all over the UK. And I went to one, and I'm talking outside to just somebody, you know, somebody that worked there in the paper mill, one of the supervisors on one of their production lines. And no one had told me this. No one had told us at all, but IT were planning to replace all their machines in a month's time. So we did this migration and they said, we've had all this disruption and IT are telling us that they're going to be giving us all new machines in 4 weeks' time. This is a complete waste of our time. And I thought, why? Why would they not tell us this?
That's a classic, though. I mean, I've heard that more than once.
And the thing is, there's a balance between the risk of doing lots of changes at once to people, and then they, you know, more people are disrupted, the mm-hmm. speed that you go, but you don't want to make people's lives miserable for the sake of a migration, do you?
No, and I was working with a customer 2 years ago who they had gone through an acquisition, a company merger, and so it was huge, very large enterprise customer. We had pretty much just completed all of their mail migrations. We had changed all the users' email addresses. They were getting used to the new ones. And then the company said, we're rebranding, and now we're going to change all your email addresses again. And one of the late night talk show hosts actually mentioned it, because he's like, are you kidding me? Like, we just got used to this. And now I think they're doing more acquisitions. So, you know, I think at this point they're used to just constant change.
It must be the Paramount umbrella as you're talking about.
that would be the one.
Because I can hear the jokes already from here.
Yeah. Even when you're following all the best one in the world, I think where I work rebranded, I still had for ages afterwards, bits I found at Office was still signed in Word. Under the old account, it still worked. But then when I got my Copilot licenses, it couldn't claim the additional license because I needed to sign out and sign back in. So you've got to avoid that user disruption. And that's why things like business change and adoption end up being on these projects so much.
When I was delivering migration projects, that was the message, right? User experience, user experience, user experience. We're here to try to make the user experience the best experience as possible. That is our goal. And that is, so because it's true, because it's the most disruptive to them, especially in these types of, desktop apps that were affecting them.
So, Becky, what are the biggest challenges that you would want to watch out for to avoid disruption or security or what have you?
Well, when we're talking about moving to the cloud, so I'd say, I think this is true in any migration project. A lot of people think it's just a matter of moving objects from one place to another and then you're done, right? When you think about disruption, it happens when people don't think of the big picture, right? So some of the big picture things, I've gotten some questions about groups. So especially a large enterprise client, okay, I'm going to flip my users to the cloud. But what if they're members of all of my AD groups, right? They're still in AD, but now I'm moving them to the cloud and I remove their AD identity. That can be disruptive because now you're having to create those cloud-only groups, replicate the membership, assign those groups access to resources. And so if you don't plan that right, you suddenly might break their access. Or you say, oh, well, now you have to use this old account and VPN, but then use your new account for everything else. So that's a bit disruptive. I think you mentioned earlier, applications, right? So you don't have to do it all at once. It's great if you can move everything, but I see a lot of people hold off on migrating to the cloud because they say, we've got these application servers and we just don't know how to handle them. We don't know what to do with them. So we're just not going to do anything. And so it's just kind of that fear of even trying. And so that can be disruptive to either stay or if you move too quickly without looking at the apps and planning them, that's a huge impact as well. So, and I guess one other thing, we keep talking about the end users, which I'm on board, right? Same thing as Rich. When I was delivering, I was all about think about the end users, but there's also the IT admins. So when you move AD to AD, your concepts are the same. Yeah, we've got group policies, we've got OUs. I understand what a domain controller is. But when you start moving all this out to the cloud, you have to switch, right? You mentioned Steve Intune. If your admins haven't ever touched Intune, they don't even understand how it works. They haven't had to do conditional access policies. Like, there's a big learning curve there, and you really got to train. And that's really disruptive. If you just move everyone and then you say, okay, good luck managing this.
If you're running hybrid identity at the moment, then hopefully you've got some good grounding in it already. But it might be that, you're not making full use of Intune or common thing is you used it a few years ago and maybe you use a different product instead. You didn't think it was great. And then it's also, you might need to relearn things or have a look at things with a fresh pair of eyes. Because if you went back like a couple of years, everyone was talking about, I think, MSIX packaging. And then I tried out, and I'm a bit late to the game, I think, the Win32 packaging of apps. I was blown away by the ease of it. It was as easy as one of those really good packaging applications that used to end up buying off the shelf because the Microsoft tools didn't work. I was packaging drivers. I think I packaged all the drivers for my lab environments, NVIDIA drivers, lots of drivers, scripts for installing things with Winget, OBS, this install, even the NDI thing. I couldn't stop packaging things. I didn't want to install anything on my machine because it was so easy. That's a completely true story as well. I just wanted to package everything. I'm so impressed with how far Intune has come along. the speed of being able to get in touch with your PCs and get logs back, and the remediation script features to be able to push out a script to collect, to run instantly, like PowerShell scripts on machines or within 5 minutes. It's a lot to learn about, though, even if you had a bit of experience with Intune before.
I mean, GPO to conditional access alone is like a monumental leap.
It's a bit of a mix, though, as well, I suppose, isn't it? You know, bits that go in different areas. So I'm gushing with with excitement about how far Intune's come since I last got hands on with it, and also wasted half a week of my spare time. The good news, if you're listening, is this is all in support of some upcoming articles on Copilot. And I wanted to make sure that the machine was that I was using with my Copilot licenses was my machine and not just a test account. But that's a big area of new stuff or newer stuff that you might have missed. And I suppose you've got to learn all those skills as well. And you're doing a migration and you're trying to learn the new stuff at the same time. That's doubly difficult.
Yeah. I'm curious, Becky, with the customers you're seeing and that they're moving devices to the cloud, especially, and they're obviously probably in hybrid mode at this point. How long do you think most of them have been in hybrid mode? Years? And now they're finally getting to it? Or is it a mix? Like, what are you seeing?
It, for the identities, I think they've been in hybrid mode for years, for a long time, because, you know, they've been migrating their Exchange
and they've been syncing
their files. So I think they've been at least in a hybrid mode for, you know, a good 10 years at this point. The devices, I would say, has been a little more recent. When I was doing delivery 5-10 years ago, I did not very often see any sort of concept of the hybrid devices. So I'd say that's a lot more recent. And so I know there are a lot out there who have been using co-management with the config manager and Intune combined. But I think there are a lot more who haven't, who are still, they've got their hybrid identities, but their devices are still 100% just in Active Directory. They're managing them that way.
But sometimes you see these things have been switched on really without too much thought. So I think one customer said, we haven't got hybrid joined machines. And then they checked the GPOs that they had managed themselves. Team of like three people, and they were, we are
right,
which means that they ticked a few boxes one day and forgot. And another customer with the co-management stuff said, "We've done the bit with the sliders."
The bit with the sliders, I know what they're talking about.
As in they enabled the co-management stuff, but they hadn't really, they weren't co-managing the two environments. So I suppose that there is that, and then there's sometimes you see customers that. I don't know whether you see this the same thing, but and this may be you working in an organization where your bosses or IT director has said to you, we've got to go cloud only. I want to go completely to the cloud. I want to get rid of all the stuff out of the data center. And I think, encountered one, but they still had ADFS and all those other things. You've still got to do all those prerequisites, right?
Yeah. And, you know, management, they love the word cloud. I think for a good 10 years now, everyone has loved the word cloud, even if they don't understand what it is. They just say, I hear this is the future. We should do this thing and go to the cloud, but they don't know what that means. And so you're right that it relies on the IT admins to go back to management and say, okay, you have to understand we've done our due diligence and we have all these hooks and we have to do a lot more than just flip a switch, move a slider. It's more than that.
If you spoke to somebody and they said, management, our IT director said, he's promised or she's promised the board that by the end of, it's February now, the end of April, we'll have moved everybody. But we thought there was like 6 months of work ahead of us on doing all the prerequisites to get ready. But she's promised it's going to happen. We've got to do something. And they've got a choice of, I suppose, not doing it, pushing back, doing it, seeing what breaks, all these different options that you've got, which are going to be weighted in, probably getting shouted out at some point by somebody, whatever you do. What would your advice be as the next thing that they should do or think about? And if it's tell management no. Fair enough.
Ideally, tell management no. From the real world, I've seen that no matter how hard you try, oftentimes management says just do it and good luck, and it gets a bit ugly.
The risk.
Yep, and you fix forward. And so, you know, if management says you're doing it one way or another, one thing I would say is hopefully they at least give you a budget where maybe you can pull in some consultants, some vendors to help you accelerate this so that it's all hands on deck. Because I also see times where they say, I want this done by the end of April, and I'm assigning this one person. This one person gets to do it all, right? And so I've seen, okay, that one person, go get a team to start analyzing logins, start analyzing, you know, Active Directory, what servers do you even have, and start to do an inventory, start reaching out to those server owners to say, what does this do? What is this application? How does it authenticate? And start pulling in more people to help delegate all of that really accelerated preparation that you're going to have to do because management didn't let you push back. That's really the best I can offer.
We were going to talk about AI because we can't have a show these days without talking
about AI. In 2023 or 2024 that doesn't have the word AI in it.
No, no. Have either of you seen the TV series Person of Interest?
I think so. It's the guy from Lost, isn't it?
Isn't this the old show? Didn't it end a few years ago?
Yeah, it's like a really... Yeah. Ended. It's like one of the, I watched it on this on Freebie. It ended ages ago.
I watched it. It was interesting. That was AI ahead of its time.
Yeah. I'm watching. I'm thinking this doesn't seem too far off. Okay, they were calling it a super intelligence, things like that during the show. But it wasn't too far off from where people seem to think we're heading now. But I have been reading a lot lately of how AI has been getting less clever when it comes to particularly ChatGPT. And I'm not going to go into, there's a lot of controversy about Google's new models at the moment and who they don't like creating pictures of. I'll leave that to other people unless either of you've got comments. We could try and alienate as many people as possible by talking about it. Should we go ahead?
Go for it.
No, I'm not going to. I'd only have to cut it later if you said anything rude.
I mean, ChatGPT 4 is slower than 3.5 when you compare one side by side for sure. And the answers seem to be more in ChatGPT 4 seem to be more succinct and well thought than the stuff in 3.5 in my personal experience. But I have experienced what you told me the last time we talked about prodding it, like asking a question and it just not doing what you want. Like, and it's the same prompts you've used before, but it's totally not getting it for whatever reason. And then you simply ask it 14 different ways or just end up quitting, going to another session and starting over because I've completely confused the thing.
And Copilot doesn't seem to be so susceptible to those things, mm-hmm. at least the Microsoft 365 version.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of people talking about, there's a post the other day on Reddit where Copilot in Windows, when someone asked it to open Skype, it replied with, I've opened Skype and I'm making the call now. And they said, okay, well, let me know when you've finished talking to the people I was going to ring. And it went, I've had the call, it was great. And it obviously hadn't done those things.
Yeah. Well,
it just hallucinated a response.
It's playing a role like you were talking about earlier. That's what it's doing. And it's trying to fulfill that role.
But the Copilot in Microsoft 365, for example, so someone who hadn't got a license at my work said, can you summarize this document for me? I got to summarize it in a quite succinct way. And then I went, make it longer. Then make it longer. And then I thought, make it funnier. This is a technical document about Citrix. Why not? But after that, it just stopped. It wouldn't go any further. It just said, I can't answer anymore. So it still does those sort of things where the context window is, can be somewhat variable. So you might be thinking it's time to build your own. And you can. So this has been in preview for a while, but it's important to know about it in Microsoft 365 now. So Azure OpenAI on your data is something where if you've got Azure and you've enabled the GPT-4, GPT-4 Turbo Preview 3.5 models, which now takes about 24 hours with a form, got reasonable capacity to add those models into regions you want, you can start up with that without really any sort of spend. If you're building it out, you might want to think about private endpoints in Azure, things like that. But fundamentally, you can use a no-code interface to create basic web app that could search data, databases, SQL sources, data lakes, or you could just give it a folder of stuff. Mm-hmm. For example, your sales team wants something that's tuned to their proposals. Almost a little bit like being able to make these ChatGPT apps over in ChatGPT, but build it in Azure AI Studio. And then you can use Copilot Studio inside Teams to then enable that for your users. That sounds pretty cool, right? It's not a super duper app, but that's an afternoon's work.
Yeah, it sounds like it, at least the way you explain it.
That's the way, yeah. It's so, like if you press all the complex buttons, like use Azure AI Search, then suddenly you've got to have a subscription for a few hundred dollars a month, but a folder full of data or some blob storage. These are cheap as chips. You can test it out for nothing. If you want to learn about it, then you can get your free trial with Azure, register a credit card, remember to cancel, but it doesn't cost anything unless you use it. So you can use it quite easily. And the other part is Logic Apps. So Logic Apps Standard. Logic Apps are Power Automate and Azure. The two are very, very similar. You can connect that to an OpenAI endpoint. So you could create a Logic App. You could create a flow in there, a connector, inside a flow that will perhaps monitor a SharePoint site for new documents. And when there's a new document, then use the OpenAI endpoint. Got to pop the API key in, ask it using the Logic App, using the connector, the config through its flow, to then go and summarize that document, and then return back the summary, and maybe update something or post something to a channel with a summary of the document that's been added, put it into some metadata inside SharePoint, those sort of things. Anything that you could do with Power Automate, pretty much, yeah. You can do with Logic Apps. But now you've got this added connector. That means that you can build automations that integrate AI, which could be really useful.
I was just talking about this to a distinguished engineer about an internal use case that for looking at competition, right? There's services out there that you can pay for that will basically send you summaries of like this company's talking about this and this company's talking about that. But, you know, yeah, those cost money. But why couldn't we just do an internal app and let an AI summarize these things and just take the feeds from RSS or wherever the feeds are from and do the same exact thing, you know, and save us a buck?
I used a premium connector to do a web call to do the same thing in Power Automate for the news that comes in through the RSS feeds. So yes, that took me about half an hour about 6 months ago. You know, it's not that it's a really good way of dropping AI into stuff where it makes things better, right?
Well, I already have RSS feeds feeding into Teams channels, like for easy stuff like that. And I guess the next step definitely is to build something else around that.
And the other one is Viva. Microsoft are still pushing the Viva train along at the moment. And Viva Insights, now that has got or is getting, and this will matter to you if you're an enterprise customer. Like if you're on the EAP, we bought it a few months ago and you'd set up Power BI dashboards, those are moving across to Viva Insights. One thing that comes up on the adoption projects for Copilot for Microsoft 365, though, is during that pilot, when they've, say, got 300 licenses in an enterprise, then the goal of that is to prove the value of it. And one of the things that you might need to do is send out regular surveys. Now, you could do that your own way, but Glint and Pulse are getting these capabilities. So there's a built-in set of Microsoft questions for assessing how users feel. It's only a few questions, but if you're sent a survey, do you really want lots?
Nope.
I think the minimum, a few pointing questions.
Best surveys have the least amount of questions.
Yeah, so it's like three or four questions that you send regularly to users to get the pulse of how things are going. And that's built in. And I think it's, you know, it is increasingly becoming quite obvious that with a Copilot project, it has that Yammer or Viva Engage style peak of excitement before people without some guidance.
The hype cycle.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's something that's...
Does the adoption, the Viva adoption piece have like scoring? Like, or is it just the surveying you're talking about?
So by the end of Q2, according to Microsoft, calendar year 2024, unless they change their mind. So, you know, don't hold them to it. Then the insights information will be integrated into the Copilot dashboard, and it will include information that they've got for Microsoft Research to give you a baseline of how well things are working as well. So Microsoft will tell you whether you're getting good value for money with the things that you are buying from them and probably considering buying more from them about. So take...
So all of them say that they're getting excellent value.
Possibly. But, who's best place to tell you? I suppose is the flip side of that. But it's, you know, it is important because it's not the most expensive of licenses. You know, how much is a ChatGPT Teams license? It's about the same amount of money. You get less, really, I suppose, for your money with a ChatGPT license these days. But it's still expensive if you're buying this for hundreds and hundreds of people.
Their token sizes are bigger. That's probably the biggest advantage.
I suppose they're not counting, are they, when you buy it from Microsoft? You don't get kicked off after a few hours because you're a business customer. So there is that.
Very true.
Viva isn't going anywhere. At least not these bits. But it's something that it's immediately, you know, of interest to the adoption consultants where I work. The alternative is doing things your own way. And why reinvent the wheel? Especially if you've got got the licenses. And the kind of customers that need to measure things at scale have usually been sold this stuff by Microsoft as well. On the roadmap this week, there's a few different things coming for Windows. To finish off the show, you wanted to talk about how AD is turning 25 years old. Does that entitle it to anything other than, as we've talked about, death? The idea it's turning 25 makes me feel very old.
Yeah, because I think both of us remember the first ADs we probably touched, or at least maybe even stood up. I mean, I remember the company where I first touched an Active Directory and started creating users and groups as a sysadmin. So, I mean, it does make you feel one way. Will you push? Yes, she has a lot to say. 25 years, 1999 was the preview, 2000 was the release. So it's coming up in April, right? We're going to do a piece in Practical 365 on it, on the history and evolution of it. So that should be pretty interesting. It's a pretty interesting story, like behind the scenes. Like, it all started from a joint project with 3Com and Microsoft. And eventually 3Com dropped it and Microsoft picked it up, and then it goes on from there. And, you know, it was part of a LAN manager project, and then Cairo took over the Cairo project, and then that was dumped, and then eventually it was ported over to the Windows team. I mean, it's a long, interesting history, and it's all documented pretty well out there on the web in different pieces. But should be an interesting topic.
Yes. And I suppose we could talk about Active Directory and our memories of it. We could come back to it and maybe throw in Novell as well while we're there. And you mentioned 3Com. What happened to US robotics? Did they ever make any robots? I was wondering this the other day. Because they sound like they should be an up-and-coming company these days.
Yeah. Just Boston moments. Dynamics bought them.
So on that note, for those of you going, what the hell? And for those of you looking back wistfully at an old modem in a corner, that is all we've got time for on this week's show. Thank you, Becky, for joining us for the whole show as well.
Thank you for having me. It's been a
pleasure. Yeah, it was a great pleasure. Thank you, Becky.
We will have to have you back on the show again, I think. And thanks, Rich. And we'll see you in a few weeks' time.